even when I was young, I felt that I had a clock inside me and it was ticking away, and I was never going to be able to do all the things that I had planned for my life. And it was so amazing to me that when I searched and found my birth mother, I told her about this exact comparison and asked her, "Does that sound familiar to you?" And she said, "You're not going to believe this, but your grandmother said the exact same thing."
Welcome to Zestful Aging, where I speak with changemakers from all over the world, from every walk of life, who will inspire you to live with zest. I'm your host, Nicole Christina, and my mission is to bring you optimism about aging and help you make full use of the new opportunities that only come at this stage of life. To find out more about this podcast, hop on over to zestfulaging.com. Well, Julia Daly calls herself a late bloomer, but that's not really the case. Instead, she bloomed throughout her life with various careers, and she even shadowed Martha Stewart. But as her age topped six decades, she ran a marathon, wrote two novels, and began a podcast to celebrate those like her who published their first books after the age of 50. And I was very honored to be on Julia's podcast. So what is there left for her to do? Well, she's taking pickleball lessons and assisting a scriptwriter in Hollywood with the treatment of her stories. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
You are such a busy woman, and you're doing really like cool things. I feel like you sat down and said, "What do I really want to do at this point?" and got very focused. Is that an exercise you did, or how did this all evolve?
Well, many years ago, I think I felt, even when I was young, I felt that I had a clock inside me and it was ticking away, and I was never going to be able to do all the things that I had planned for my life. And it was so amazing to me that when I searched and found my birth mother, I told her about this exact comparison and asked her, "Does that sound familiar to you?" And she said, "You're not going to believe this, but your grandmother said the exact same thing." So I don't know if it's hereditary, that we just want to burn ourselves out before we leave this planet, or what's going on.
That's so interesting. Let's spend a couple minutes talking about adoption. And, you know, you're very open about your search for your birth mother. Can you talk a little bit about how old you were and what made you decide to search for her?
Well, I don't ever remember a time when I didn't know I was adopted. I had wonderful adoptive parents, and I think they began reading children's adoption stories to me when I was young. And the books always emphasized how adoptees are chosen children. And so I was always taught I was very special and loved and wanted. And I knew it wasn't a secret, but I did feel special. And I was also a very curious child. So as I entered my 20s and began to start my own family, I began to worry about health issues because, you know, when you go into the doctor's office, they ask you, "Do you have heart disease or cancer or diabetes in your family?" And I would have to say, "I don't know, because I'm adopted." And we would have to start from scratch with all of my health concerns. So that was the reason I decided to search. When I was pregnant with my second daughter, I went to New Orleans, which is where I was born. And luckily for me, there was still a Napoleonic law on the books there that said that an adopted child can inherit from their natural parents. Well, you can't inherit from somebody that you don't know. So that was the the little key that opened the door. It was a loophole and it didn't stay open very long. So I was fortunate to be able to get my original birth certificate. And that's how I found my birth mother. And then flash forward a few years when all these commercial DNA kits became so prevalent, you know, everybody was giving them for gifts. I found my birth father's family as well. He had passed away 30 years ago, but I did find his side of the family. So it's been quite a journey and very exciting, and it worked out well for me. But I always tell adoptees, if they decide they want to search, you know, they have to go into it with the knowledge that it might not be a good situation. You have to hope for the best, but expect the worst.
I just can't imagine trying to make that decision.
Well, you know, there are so many of us here in the country. There are 100 million Americans who have adoption in their immediate families. And that's just a staggering number to me. But, you know, there's so many conversations right now around that subject. And in today's society, you know, we have same-sex adoptive parents, open or closed record states. We talk about adopting out of the culture, and the flip side of the coin, abortion and the lawsuits that are surrounding Roe and versus Wade. So there are just as many opinions on every subject as there are adopted children.
I see. Do you think the fact that you are adopted, Julia, I mean, I know it made you who you are, but did it contribute to your, how shall I say, zest for life? I mean, you shadowed Martha Stewart in your younger years. You ran a marathon. You wrote, you know, you have not wasted much time. Is that something you can connect with, the fact that you're adopted?
You know, there may be some feelings that I've squashed down deep inside me that want to come out as being an overachiever. You know, I don't know how my psyche works through all of that, but I do know that I have always just felt so fortunate that I wanted to give back to my community, that I wanted to do things for myself and for my family. And my eldest daughter believes in adoption and adopted 4 older children from ages 16 to 8. So I hope that she saw a good mentoring from me about adoption and how it can work out so beautifully. And she decided to take that step and to join those children into our own family.
Wow. That is, as a psychotherapist, you know, I think about what those implications might be as an older child, and it's just so complex.
Well, it really is. And, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of children in this country in foster care, and many of them are not able to be adopted. And it's certainly a system that we need to take another look at and to try to work through, because all of those children want a family.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Hi, Zesties. Hey, if you're enjoying this episode, I would so appreciate if you would share with just one person, like a family member or a friend, who would enjoy and benefit from Zestful Aging Podcast. Thank you so much. Do you want to talk a little bit about what made you decide to start your own podcast?
You know, after I wrote my 2 books, far after the age of 50, I was not able to be as marketable, I think, at this age as I would have been had I been in my 20s, 30s, and 40s. And I just thought, I wonder why people are not celebrating this significant achievement of people over the age of 50 writing their first books. And I wonder how many of me are out there and who else needs publicity about their books. So I said, you know, they say that that authors should do blogs or podcasts or some way to build a platform for their work. And I think I'll just take a course about that. and so I had a podcast coach, and I just decided I'll do this. You know, it probably won't last but a few months. You know, I've read about the pod fade and, yes. and how people start podcasts, and by their 10th episode, they're finished if they make it that far.
That's right. I think the average is 7 or something because yeah. it's there's so much fun and it's so much work.
Well, people don't realize how much work it is and how much time for every single episode. It just takes hours and hours. And then there's a cost if you have a sound engineer, if you can't do the editing yourself. So I said, I'll just do this for a little while and give back to my writing community. And as you well know, it just becomes addictive.
I think we talked about that. It's like, I can't stop. I won't stop.
It is so addictive hearing people's stories, and it's one-on-one talking to people that you never would have met any other way.
Yeah, that's the hook for me. Are you finding some commonalities in your guests who have published over 50? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing that everyone that I interview has had a significant career, and that has kept them from writing the book that they've always wanted to write. Or some of them will say, I never wanted to be a writer, but in retirement, I had the time and I took some classes and learned the craft, and then I wrote the book. So there are a lot of different ways that you can come to it, but I'm interviewing doctors and attorneys and MBAs and such fascinating people who have said, you know, I've had this great career and I've spent all my time rearing my children, and now this is my time and this is what I want to do. And it really has become a way that people can, you know, continue to grow and to keep their minds sharp and to be around a whole different group of people that they never might have met otherwise when they're writing and going to conferences and selling their books in bookstores and traveling. You know, it has become another career.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that most of your guests are aware that it's what they're writing is not likely to become a huge bestseller and that they're going to be on Oprah, but that this is, I guess I should ask, is it more of a labor of love, or are they looking to become famous?
Nicole, you know we all want to write the great American novel and become immediately famous.
Yes.
And hit the New York Times bestseller list.
That's right.
But of course, that's a very small percentage. I think they're like 2 million titles a year published in the U.S. So that's why we're waving our hands saying, somebody, look at me, look and see what I've written, and trying to get a little attention, which is what I'm trying to do on the podcast. But I have interviewed New York bestsellers, a Reese Witherspoon pick, you know, some people who have waited long enough to have so many life experiences and wisdom and hindsight under their belt, and they are writing beautiful work. And I'm also interviewing people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are still writing beautiful work.
Wow, that is so inspiring to hear. I'm so happy to hear that. Can you talk a little bit about this script writer in Hollywood situation?
Yes, I took another course. You know, I'm hooked on all these courses. So if somebody offers a course or a class online, then I'm going to take it.
Yep.
So I took a course that talked about taking your books to the big screen. And then they recommend a media agent for you in Hollywood. And I've been working with two lovely young women who are walking my books around to Hollywood studios. Of course, that sounds very simple, but it's very complex, actually. You know, they have to do a pitch deck, what they call a pitch deck, which is a visual that shows, you know, the premise and the plot of your book and what characters you have and what talent in Hollywood you might attach to that project. And, you know, it's very complicated, but they have engaged a script writer for one of my books and about to do the same for the second one. And then, of course, it's another long process of trying to find a producer and talk to the talent and all of that. But, you know, it's very interesting. I don't know if you've ever said this, but most of us have read a book and seen the movie and say, you know, the book was so much better.
Yes.
And there's a reason for that, because these script writers take the idea of your book. There's a reason also, I think they're, it's called, if you see on the screen, inspired by. They take a little inspiration and they take it wherever they want. And one of them told me, well, you know, Hollywood's going to sex up these books. And I said, well, are my grandchildren going to be able to watch this movie if it comes into play? And they said, we don't know. We don't know. How old are your grandchildren?
Oh, my goodness. So how it would go is that you would sell the rights?
And you usually don't have much say after that. So that's why authors are usually not enamored by their films if they ever do see the light of day. And, you know, they can buy the rights and put it on a shelf for 20 years. And I told them, I don't have that much time. You're going to have to get it out faster than that for me to be able to see it. Or it's just going to be a legacy for my grandchildren.
Is there a shortcut?
Yes, that's what I kept saying. You know, all these streaming services, they're just gobbling up materials.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so they're pushing it a little faster than I think a major motion picture would be.
Are there any actors that you have your thoughts on that you think would be really great for your characters?
Well, actually, we had to send a list of those, and I had to go online because, you know, at my age, I don't know all the young actors. I know the people that I would have placed in those positions 20 years ago, but it's all changed. But there is one that I'm keeping my fingers crossed, you know, Eva Longoria calls herself a Texican, because she grew up here in Texas. And one of my books is a contemporary Western called The Fifth Daughter of Thorn Ranch. And I would love for her to play that part.
Mm-hmm. She's a mature woman, yes?
She is. And she's young enough to have had a 20-year-old daughter who is also going to be in the movie. But she would be a wonderful talent to attach to that script.
How do you balance your hope and, you know, fingers crossed kind of thing, and try not to get too much expecting that this is, you know, how do you balance that? Because it could be very distracting, I imagine.
My husband keeps me very grounded. He'll say, you're not really expecting this to happen, are you? And I'll say, no, not really. But it's always fun to hope. So it's really in the back of my mind, I think it's never going to happen. But when they call me and say, we've talked to this producer, or they're really interested over at this, you know, certain studio, then it gets your hopes up and it gives you something to dream for.
Boy, I would be putting that vision board all over the place. I'd be, yes, I do hope that and see that right in my future. That is really fun. I imagine that gives you some credibility also with your writing community.
Well, you know, we don't always share as much as we should. You know, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings if they aren't having success. And yet we see others who are having much more. So, you know, you always think you're that imposter syndrome, that we're not ever achieving what we really want to, because there's always somebody flying higher and faster.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's sure. I've heard that from many guests. So now you are in your sixth decade. You've done, boy, a lot of really interesting and fun, challenging work. And you're talking about taking pickleball lessons. And we touched on that, I think, in my interview, because you know I interviewed some pickleballers. What's that been like for you?
Well, you know, I always think in my head that I can do more than my body wants me to. And so I still see myself as that 20-year-old who could run like the wind. You know, in my dreams, I just run like the wind and I can hit those balls just so easily. And when you finish just your little lesson, you think, oh, my knees are, I've got to go ice these knees because you just don't have the stamina that you used to. But I think it's a great community to be involved with. As you well know, the seniors who are playing tennis and pickleball, you know, they're staying active. We're working our minds and our bodies, and it's a great social atmosphere. And I've talked my husband into taking lessons with me, and he has terrible knees. His knees, yeah. He was a runner at one time, and his knees really need to be replaced, but he won't have it done. So I've talked him into playing with me, and it'll be something fun that we can do together.
And it's okay to be on the same team, because sometimes when I'm on the court with my husband, I'm not the most, how shall I say, it's not the best version of myself.
Well,
I kind of become true. A little tyrant, if that's.
Yeah. You have to run circles around him and get the ball if he misses it.
Yeah, that's so fun. So you're doing all this great stuff. You've checked so many boxes. What are the next exciting adventures for you?
You know, I want to write another book. I'd like to write a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those of us who have ex-husbands we'd like to kill off, you can always write a book about that. And so that might be my next project.
Oh my goodness. That is really funny that would be kind of your model.
Absolutely. So that's probably what's next. And I am starting to speak at some conferences. In part of my career, I was in public relations and marketing. And so I feel that I can pay it forward again to my fellow novelist and save them, you know, having to search for all these marketing ideas. So I'm going to speak to some conferences about marketing for authors.
Oh, that sounds like a great niche. And that is something you would travel for, or would you try to stay in your hometown?
Well, I thought that, you know, we'd be doing a lot of Zoom meetings still, but they're starting to open up now. So I think that it would involve some travel.
Mm-hmm. And is that something that you enjoy?
I do if the flights all cooperate.
Yes.
I tell everybody not to get on a flight with me because I'm the most unlucky flyer in the world. Because if I get on a plane, it's going to sit on the tarmac for 2 hours and then they're going to cancel the flight and take us back to the terminal.
Oh, dear. And the bathroom will be out of order.
Exactly.
Oh. Goodness. So before we end, I have to ask you about Martha Stewart. As somebody who is a big time foodie, how did you end up shadowing her?
Well, it was so long ago. It was back in 1985 when her first book, Entertaining, came out. If you ever saw it, it was a
sure.
beautiful,
classic.
Beautiful book. And I actually met her at a cooking class in Jackson, Mississippi, where I was living. And I just hounded her. I was that squeaky wheel that needed the grease. And I just kept calling her and bugging her. And I kept saying, just let me come shadow you. It won't cost you anything. And I'll be free labor. And she says, well, I've never done that before. And I said, well, let me be the first. And,
I went
to Connecticut and I shadowed her and just saw some fabulous events that she put on. And I learned so much. I was actually catering myself at the time and thought she was living my life and living in this historic home and these beautiful gardens. And so it was a great experience for me. I think after that, of course, being the entrepreneur that she is, she started charging people to come shadow her.
Yes. Well, entrepreneur is one thing that she is. That is true.
Right.
That's really great. So, and I know you get this question all the time, Julia, for all the women that are listening and have always wanted to write a book and they're starting to see this window of opportunity. Maybe they've launched their kids, maybe their marriage is, you know, they're doing something a little bit different than their partner. They maybe have some more resources. What is the first baby step towards writing a book at 50 and over?
I think to take a class. You know, I'm big on classes, and there, every organization in the country, every writing organization, every nonprofit, they offer all of these classes online, and you can just take them from your office in your home. And it really helps you to hone your craft, and it helps you to learn if you want to write fiction or nonfiction or a memoir. Memoir is very popular now, and there are so many classes that you can begin to take, and that will actually whet your appetite to get the words on paper, to establish a routine of writing every day. And a lot of people journal, and they've journaled for years, and they take that and turn it into a memoir. And even if you're just going to use that as a legacy gift to your family, you could have that bound and give it to your children. You know, so there are great ideas, you know, out there for writing. You don't have to publish in the big publishing world if you don't want to, but I love the idea of getting our family stories down on paper and recording our elderly before we lose their voices, because I think that's the first thing we lose in our memory, are our parents and grandparents' voices.
Mm-hmm. So it's really, you're talking about just getting some words down and not focusing necessarily on structure or chapters, but just writing.
Yes, and there's a National Novel Writing Month in November. There's a nonprofit that puts that on, and they challenge you to write 50,000 words in the month of November. That's 1,667 words a day. And being an English major, it was so difficult to me because I want to write a few sentences and go back and edit those sentences. Uh-huh. And with writing that many, you can't edit. You just got to get the words on paper. And when you're finished, you can come back and edit. So it helped me to gain some speed in writing. So if you know, want to do something like that and take a challenge, you can challenge yourself. But I wouldn't worry about, you know, writing the great American novel at the beginning. I would just start getting words on paper. And as we writers say, those characters will start talking to you and they will be in your head, and you will think you're taking dictation sometimes. So if you have a story in you, it has to come out.
That sounds, I love that whole idea that it's, you're just downloading it somehow, you know, that you're just almost like a vessel and you have to get it out on paper, and that it's not a beautiful, graceful, if you read Anne Lamott, you know, she talks about just writing stuff down that, you know, she's in her pajamas and she hasn't, you know, showered yet, and it's not, it's not like in the movies. There's kind of a, maybe even like a little grungy aspect.
That's exactly like I see in the movies, you know, where the writers never leave their office for days, and they do look very grungy. And that's the way you want it to be pouring out of you like that. You want to never leave your office, but that's not the case in most situations. You know, most of the time there are morning people and there are night people, and people can write for, you know, a couple of hours in the morning, or there are night people and they write at midnight. But you'll find your place, and you'll be able to get those words down and see if it's worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that just, it sounds like an invitation for people to just kind of jump out a little bit of their comfort zone and see what it feels like.
Absolutely. We say it's never too late to write your first book.
It's never too late. Julia, where can people find out more about you and look at your books and see what's being produced in Hollywood?
It's www.juliadaily, and that's like daily newspaper, daily.com.
Mm-hmm. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm really appreciate your wisdom in this area, and wishing you the best. I'm going to send some good Eva Longoria vibes. And I disagree with your husband. I'm all about like, yep, let's imagine how this is going to happen. Let's envision it. I do that on the tennis court when we're in a tiebreaker. I'm like, you know, just envision shaking hands. We won. So, all right. Well, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for spending time with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us on Zestful Aging. If you like the podcast, please share it with some of your friends.
Our music is courtesy of Judy Banker, who was a previous guest on the show. Find out more at judybanker.com. And our technical director is Stephen Littweiler.
Hello, Zesties. Well, many of you know that I've been a psychotherapist for more than 30 years, and I'm an expert in healthy aging. But what you might not know is that I'm also a midlife coach, and I help women like you clarify and design the life you want to live in your second half. A life that's vibrant and feels uniquely like you. Maybe you've spent your entire life caring for others in one way or another, and you're a bit stuck with how to move forward in this new phase of your life. Or maybe you're considering a career change or other big life transition. Or maybe you're in the middle of a life change you didn't see coming. You may be asking yourself questions like, who am I now? And how do I build a new kind of life for myself? Or how do I make the most of the time I have left? This stage in our lives is the perfect time to pause, recalibrate, and reassess where our life is heading and ask ourselves what deserves our precious time. Now is the time to focus on what brings you joy and a sense of deep, calm contentment. I love helping women discover who they are in addition to being caregivers. After our sessions, you will have a clear plan for making your life more vibrant and deeply satisfying. You will feel a sense of control because you will be making choices that are perfect for you. And you will feel more confident because you will have an individualized blueprint to follow. And because you're a Zestful Aging podcast listener, I'm offering a special package deal. Contact me at zestfulaging.com right through my contact link. Time is truly precious, and there's no time to waste.
And stay tuned next week for another interview with a fascinating and inspiring guest.